Hi, I'm James P. Friel.
And I'm Dean Holland. It's time to fasten your seatbelts, boys and girls.
That's right. If you're an entrepreneur who's wanting to take your business to the next level and have a bit of fun while getting cutting-edge advice on your business, marketing, and sales, welcome to Just the Tips, arguably the best podcast in the entire world. I guess that's good, right?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
All right. That was easy. That was the easiest thing we did all day.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Just the Tips. This is your host, James P. Friel. I am thrilled that you guys are joining us today. We have an awesome show lined up for you. Talking about something that is so important, but most people don't really think about it because they get caught up in the day to day of their business. And so we've got a repeat guest here who I'm very excited that agreed to come back on the show. And I see Mr. Dean Holland galloping over the hills, the rolling hills of Nottingham, UK, riding into the studio on his white noble steed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome the one, the only bearded wonder from the United Kingdom, Mr. Dean Holland.
Woo! Just jumped out the saddle into the chair there, just in time.
Your hair looks amazing. Considering, what I just saw, what I just witnessed as you coming into the studio.
Yes, well, I fashioned some sort of like space helmet now so that as I'm galloping through, the wind just like aerodynamically flies around.
Are you sure you don't have like Lego hair, like a Lego man where it just like snaps into place because it looks a little too fixed?
I can't reveal all the secrets here today.
Right. Someday we will have an episode where you reveal the secrets of how you are so good looking and your hair stays in place.
These compliments? I'm suspicious. What's about to happen?
Don't worry. Wait until about halfway through the show. You're going to find out Wimby. I'm so nice to you today. So we've got a repeat guest today who I'm very excited that we have back on the show. Last time he was here, he was talking about deal making. And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners, really can do better over the long term in their business if they focus not just on how much cash are we making now, but how are we actually increasing the value of the business that we have, right? And it's easy to get stuck in, we got to sell this many products and we've got to make this kind of bottom line and we got to do all these different things. And I'm not saying that's not important because it is. But there's another dimension that's just as important, if not more important, over the long term, and that's how do we actually create value inside of the business. And so without further ado, I'll bring him on to the show, Mr. Arye Scheinven, who was on the show before, back by popular demand. Welcome to the melee, my friend. How are you today?
Thank you. I am well. You know, now that you've gone video, it was totally worth coming just to actually see the steed in live form. You know, before it's like you have to kind of like picture it. But now that you get to see it behind stage, it's totally worth it. Anyone who hasn't been on video has got to come for video.
Thank you for that. And I'm glad you brought that up because it is a privileged sighting for those people that we have on as guests. Obviously, we don't have all the time to show everybody live, the steed that Dean rides in on. But I assure you, he's back there in the green room waiting to take Dean back to his English manor once the show is over.
Yes, yeah. The three-hour hike that I must take in the evening every time we do this show is it's never the easiest, but, we get there.
That's just dedication.
That's exactly what it is. You know, I don't think all the people who are listening to the show thoroughly appreciate the dedication and the commitment and the saddle soreness that Dean experiences riding in the studio and then back home. But anyway, we'll get to talking more about that later on in the show. For now, like I said in the pregame, Arye, and in the intro, I'm so excited to have you back, man, to talk about value creation. I think it's a topic that a lot of business owners, I don't think they dismiss it, but I don't think they fully comprehend the importance, what it really means. You know, it's not necessarily something that you see more money in the bank tomorrow because you're focusing on value creation, but it really is something that can pay huge, huge dividends in the future. And so before we kind of get into that, can you give us your definition of like what does it even mean to have value creation and increase the value of your business?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point, and I think it's an important topic. So if you think about your business, right, like a lot of people, depending on the size, everybody's thinking and focused on different things, the size of the business. But for the most part, when we think about the value creation, we're thinking about like what a willing buyer would probably pay for this, even if you never intend to sell the business. But just like, hey, if I'm going to buy a stock, if I'm going to buy a company, if I'm going to buy anything, we typically think about what is it worth, and we think about like what is it going to be worth in the future.
Buy a horse, for example.
Right. It could be a marketing expense, or it could be an increase in value because steeds are rare.
They are very rare.
But part of like when we focus on the business side, right, we're focusing on what someone's going to pay because of future cash flows or how they're going to operate a business. So when we think about that, we're not just thinking about like actual money that comes into my bank account, exactly what you said, right? Yeah. We're thinking about like what is the inherent value of the business. And so there's both financial aspects of that, but there's also intangible things in the business. You know, if we think about like, you know, the quintessential examples of like Coca-Cola, right? That brand itself has tremendous value. And if they were to like spin off a piece like Sprite or Fresca or something one day, they could get a lot of value, not just based on the numbers that, you know, sales are generated, but like, hey, someone may have ideas to do something differently with Fresca. They may want to make ice pops or something of that nature, right? Like almost like licensing the brand. You can think about the intangible value of that. Or in the online space or a lot of entrepreneurs' businesses, the customer list, right? Like a huge value, because if you're going to sell off the business, they may say, oh, well, we can expand it. Right. Like if Dean Holland started selling, I don't know, hair gel that, you know, people wouldn't have to worry about riding horses and having messy hair, right? Then it could be that he's going to merge it into another business that already has the customer base. So are you just
bringing that up as an example, or do you already know he has a brand called Helmet Head Hair Gel?
I heard that maybe there may be something in the works, and, you know, he just didn't want to let you in on it yet, but I don't know. Wow.
I'm a bit disappointed in you guys. This was not supposed to be announced for another 3 weeks.
Right. I apologize.
We're pre-selling.
Well, you know why we outed you, Dean? Because you didn't share with us behind the scenes, and we were hurt by that. And I was like, you know what? He deserves to be outed for not telling me this ahead of time. So anyway, 3 weeks from now, Helmet Head Hair Gel coming to a store near you. So REA, in terms of value creation, right, you're talking about the financial aspects, you're talking about the intangible aspects of things. What are actual, like, if I'm putting myself in a lot of the people that I talk to shoes, they don't necessarily have a definitive plan of selling their business.
Mm-hmm.
And so this conversation, like, I want to be really clear why people should stay tuned into this, even if they don't plan on selling the business. Like, what is the rationale and the logic behind increasing the value of the business if you don't intend to sell, you don't feel like it, it's not something you know about? Like, why still even bother with this topic?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So there's ways to monetize a business without actually exiting it. I think it's one of these things that like everybody always assumes you have to have an exit, especially like in today's environment where, you know, you have e-commerce brands and Amazon businesses that are getting sold for real multiples on earnings. But everyone's always like, well, maybe I don't want to sell my business, so what do I care, right? To your point. Well, you know, if you think about the thing I always equate for people, like the easiest thing for people to really understand, is I always kind of come back to your home. So when you think about your home purchase, right, you have the aggregate purchase price, what you paid for the house, and then you probably borrowed some amount for your mortgage. And the difference between the two is what we call the equity, right? Yeah. So you may have written the check at the time, but as the home value increases, right, your equity piece increases because the debt is staying the same or actually declining as you kind of pay it down, right? So the equity value is going up. So there's the simplest way to think about it is like, let's say you wanted to tap in to that money, your equity value, and you didn't want to sell your house, but you wanted some of that cash, right? Well, we know in the mortgage market in the United States, what do? You refinance, and you potentially can either ask for a bigger loan because the value of the house has gone up, or you can just say, hey, like I've paid down this much mortgage, let me re-up that mortgage and kind of take that money. So either way, you're taking money out of the house, and we call it, we're taking some of the equity money out and we're putting in our bank account.
Right.
The same thing works for a business. You know, if you think about these big companies, these private equity firms, a lot of times they buy the business and they ultimately sell it. But along the way, they do things that we call like dividend recaps. But all it is what they're doing is they're leveraging the business more. They're putting more debt on the books, and they're actually taking that money out in the form of a dividend to them, you know, to their investors. As a single, you know, owner business, you can do the same thing. There are ways to creatively take money out of the business and put it in your pocket because it's worth more. Just like the house was appreciating. Mm-hmm. If you make that business more valuable, even if you don't sell it, there's ways to kind of extract value from your business. And you know, dividend recapping or getting a loan and taking out a dividend is just one form. There's many different forms, but that's one reason to just increase the value of the business.
Awesome. And I'm so glad you touched on that, because now what I want to get into is like, well, how do you increase the value? What are some of the levers that you can pull on the financial side, on the intangible side? And then let's get into, okay, cool. I don't want to sell the thing, but I do want to pull out some of that value. I do want to cash in some of my chips, so to speak. How do we do that?
Yeah.
Dean, are you dialed in with that agenda? You feel like that's good?
I feel that's along the lines of the standard that I would set if it were me that were saying what you just said.
Right. Okay, perfect. Well, and I'd also like to note that the business that I'd like to use as a hypothetical is the Helmet Head Hair Gel. So we've just started, or we soon to be started, Helmet Head Hair Gel by Dean Holland at Helmet Head Hair.
With these type of analogies, though, because what you don't see is the excited Dean that leaves the podcast and starts looking for trademarks.
we both know you have that trademark for like some time now.
He's probably also got like, you know, 55 domains in his Namecheap account GoDaddy or whatever he's got. You know,
Helmethead.biz. Helmethead.dean, like all these different domains. So, all right. So we got this hypothetical business here. Let's talk about how we actually increase the value, right? So in this case, in our fictitious business, or maybe it's not fictitious, I guess soon we'll know.
Soon
we'll
find out, right?
Right. We've got a product, a physical product. We're probably going to sell it, through online channels, maybe through our own e-commerce, sales funnels, Amazon or whatever. Like, what are some of the ways that we can increase the value of this business?
Yeah, no, totally. So obviously the thing that you always hear about, right, is everybody's like, hey, let's increase sales. So let's drive more sales. So we sales, sales, sales. But the reality is, right, like, you know, most people who are very, let's call it, accounting driven get these points right away. But like, and James, I know you yourself kind of have talked about some of these things in the past, but the reality is like, if you drive sales, you know, so let's use an example. $100 of sales comes in. Now, Dean, between his manufacturing costs, his marketing costs, his delivery costs, everything, it costs $75 to service that $100 of revenue, right? Yeah. So he sells the hair balm for $100, but realistically, only $25 drops to the bottom line. And what is the natural thought? Okay, how are we going to improve the dollar amount? How much money are we going to actually make? So we're making $25, 25% net margins. But if Dean now goes and says, okay, I'm going to increase the price to $110, but it's still only going to cost me the $75, we have $35 dropping to the bottom line. So the net margins are somewhere below 35%, you know, somewhere in that 30 to 34%-ish range, right? But if Dean had instead not gone and charged the customer more, but rather he said, okay, I'm going to still charge $100, but I'm going to squeeze out $10 in my cost. I'm going to either find a way to be more efficient in my ad spend. I'm going to have the marketing agency tweak those ads a little bit better. I'm going to go to my manufacturer and say, hey, I need you to take a dollar off the production because I'm doing so well and we're selling millions of tubes of hair gel every month, whatever it is. Or say, oh, you know, the packaging, instead of putting it in this hard box, I'm going to make it into like a slightly cheaper box or whatever it is. And we shave a dollar here, a dollar there. And we get to the point where our hard cost becomes $65.
Mm-hmm.
The same $35 falls to your bank account, to the bottom line, but your margins now are 35%.
Mm.
So you didn't raise the price on the people. Mm-hmm. You're making more. But when you go and you sell a business, or you go and you look to refinance, or you do something, they're going to look at both the dollar amount and the percentage margin, right? Specifically, if a buyer is there, he wants to know what the margins of that business are. And he's going to say, okay, I'll pay you based on those margins. So if you drive top line, you didn't improve the margins as good as you could have had you just squeezed your expense side of the equation.
Right, right. And there's nothing to say you can't do both, right? Like you can't Correct. Pull both levers.
100%.
But I think you're absolutely right. Like most people that I know are not looking at the cost side of the equation first, even though right. generally speaking, the cost side of the equation is probably easier to manipulate.
Totally.
Right? It's like, right. we could shave a dollar here, a dollar there or something.
Well, I know me and you have spoke on this subject quite a lot in the past, haven't we, James? Because you've mentioned this a lot of times in the past about the importance of saving that dollar rather than trying to make the extra. Well, not instead of, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's just not, I think it's like not thinking there's only one way.
Yeah, for sure.
To grow.
Because I think we just live in a world where so many things, especially in the online space, is about sales. And increasing the price, or hey, sell your value, not just, you know, the fixed price. And so I think the mentality just needs to change a little bit.
Yeah. So one of the other things is what about the, you know, what factor does frequency of purchase, recurring revenue, lifetime value of those customers, like all that, like how does that bear on the valuation of a business?
Totally has tremendous value, right? Like it has a major impact in the sense that, like, if we're just selling hammers, right? How often does one buy a hammer? Every 3 years? You know, if you're super clumsy and you break them,
depends on how strong your hair gel is.
I've never bought a hammer. Just ram.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. Carry on.
Well, the point is, right, it's a one-off purchase. And for Dean, it may be a never-off purchase.
Right.
But for the average person, it's not a frequent purchase. Whereas like the supplement business or anything that's consumable, where people are coming back and buying it every month or every quarter or even twice a year, there's tremendous value in the stickiness of that business, in the sense of like someone's going to pay you typically a higher multiple or value that in a more favorable light because they know that there's continuity there, right? So like when you think about, you know, I don't know, if I wanted to send someone flowers, for example, right? Like should that be a recurring business? Then there's interest in like knowing that, hey, I'm on some sort of subscription versus like, hey, I buy twice a year, Valentine's Day and Mother's Day or whatever it is, right? So monthly recurring revenue or annual recurring revenue is definitely a driver for valuations. And that's why, like, you see the SaaS businesses, right? Like everyone's always chasing like, hey, how can I take a technology, spend it once, and then get a monthly recurring revenue off of it? And those valuations have gone up tremendously. I mean, even if you look at, if you think about Peloton, I like to use that as a really good example of where when people look at them, they're like, oh, they're selling these $2,000 bikes and these $4,000 treadmills. But yeah, they're not, right? No, like they're selling a subscription.
Totally.
Correct. And all of these businesses that are selling the subscription that they can squeeze out, and you know, the cost of the content is once and then they're recurring. And that's really like, you know, Netflix and Costco. Another perfect example, right? Costco they make like whatever, 12, 13% margins on their products. And that just keeps the lights on and pays for employees. Where they make the money is when they charge everybody $55 a year.
Right.
And they have a few hundred, you know, I think like 100 million people. Same with Amazon. Amazon, you know, they kind of changed it from like 100 to 119. Well, you know how many billions of dollars they just dropped of cash to the bottom line?
Totally.
So all these things are like, you know, if you look at the businesses, right, like Apple, people like kind of confuse for a technology company. But look where a lot of their money is coming from now.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Music, storage, all these different things. So there's definitely tremendous value in recurring revenue. There's no question about it.
So I think if you're, you know, kind of following along to have a little checklist here of ideas to go back and brainstorm on how to increase the valuation of the business, you've got First, how can you improve the profitability, right? First, seek to strip out some costs that aren't going to make a material difference to your sales, right? Because you could take so much cost out that people would be like, this thing sucks.
Sucks, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
Now helmet head hair gel is like glue and it never comes out of people's hair and they're like pretty pissed about it.
And never buying it again.
Right. Yeah, they're not buying it again. So improving the bottom line, reducing costs, also seeking how you can increase top line, but then how can you increase the frequency with which people are purchasing and the regularity and the consistency of that. I'm sure there's more, but I'm also interested to explore with you the intangible side, right? Because those are more financial metrics that you can see, and I think those are more obvious to people. Hopefully, like, even if you're not thinking about how do I increase the valuation of the business, you're probably like, well, how could I make my profit bigger? How could I get more money for more frequently, right? So, but what about the intangible stuff? Like, you know, carrying this this little mock case study we're doing here, what are the intangibles in Helmet Head Hair Gel?
So I think Helmet Hair Hair Gel has yet
to really... It is a mouthful. I think we might need to have a few focus
Triple H
groups.
Or something. Like,
yeah. Triple H Hair Gel.
I think there's a few things, right? So the brand is not yet super well known, right?
No.
Give it some time.
Man.
We just announced it today. I mean, come on.
He's really got his ego tied up in this hair gel. I mean, it's like, come on, man.
It went straight to his head.
Oh my God. Oh man.
See the drum set, you know?
You know, that's right. Yeah. All right. So Dean, just take a deep breath.
All right.
We're only talking here. This is no judgment on you or your brand.
Well, he might be talking to you. This is life for me. All right.
Yeah. All right. So it's not, so the brand is not well known yet.
Correct.
Operative work.
Correct. But we have the ability to say, okay, how many customers do we have? And what is that average purchase price? And so again, because it's a new business, we don't necessarily know the lifetime value of that customer.
Yeah.
But those two things are big metrics, right? Like when we can increase the lifetime value of the customer, which naturally can be increased by just increasing the purchase price, like the average cart value or whatever it is. So if we're combining all the things we're talking about, right? So we've improved margins, but now we're getting frequency of purchase up, right? So Dean puts people on to a subscription model. So every 3 months they get it delivered. But the other way to increase that average order size, right, is to say, oh, well, you know, we have this ancillary product that's very complementary, or we have this other item that is like a brush or whatever it is, because it's a special brush we're going to need to get through this, you know, special hair gel.
Absolutely.
But the customer list itself, if we can show the frequency of purchasing, someone may want that customer list just in general, right? Because there's complementary products that the other company who really focuses on the beards, because I'm clearly the only guy on the show without a beard, right? So the beard balm.
Even the steed has a beard.
So James's beard balm company may be very complementary to Dean's hair gel company, right? And so there may be good customer overlap. And so if James is in the market to expand his business and says, hey, Dean, I'm looking to acquire your business, he's going to want to understand, like, okay, what are the frequency of these purchases? What are those average? And as well as how many people do you have? Like, are we talking about, you know, 10 customers? Or are we talking about 10 million customers or somewhere in between? Because I think, you know, you're going to also have, Dean's going to eventually have customers who, you know, don't continue to purchase like any normal business. And those customers, though, if you can keep them reasonably engaged, if Dean does his magic and he writes great copy and he sends out emails, they may not be purchasing, but they're still somewhat active.
Right.
There's value to those people, right? Because, and even if Dean doesn't like, if he's not able to close them on that next product, but they're interested in the beer bomb or they're interested in something in that space, there could be synergies as well that, you know, Dean finds a way to monetize it without actually being acquired by James's beard company.
What do you think? You know, so you touched on the customer list, sort of touched on brand. What are some of the major categories that you'd see as the big intangibles that people should be thinking about besides those two things?
Good question.
I think those two are far and away the biggest, but I think it also, like, if you're able to, if we look at some of the brands that have been acquired over the last like 5-10 years, and you look at how almost like niche they were, right? Like a lot of people have used the example of, you know, RX bars, right? So RX bars got acquired by Kellogg for about, I don't know, $600 million, probably in year 3 to 6 of the business. The brand had already hit, you know, shelves of some of the major grocery stores. But the reality is why did Kellogg's buy it? It's because Calix is a big behemoth of a company, and they can't, they're not nimble. They can't come up with like new products that are vertical, you know, niche verticals that are very focused, you know, even like native deodorant, all these mm-hmm. things that really speak to that person. So Dean went and he found purest of pure ingredients. He found all organic. He found the health conscious person who doesn't want junk in their hair. That vertical now, even though there's like, that's an intangible. There's no way to like say, hey, it's worth X, Y, and Z. It's very difficult to put the value on that. But because Dean knows his avatar, Dean speaks to his person. That is a huge intangible that, you know, a major company may just say, Unilever may just say, you know what? We can't speak to that person.
Right.
We don't, you know, and like, and there's tons of these acquisition examples out there where mm-hmm. people just like were buying that customer base. Not because the product may have been amazing, but the reality is they're speaking to that one little vertical, and now they can potentially market a ton of other stuff to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a ton of sense. So, I have a few other questions that I want to ask. Dean, anything that pops into your mind
sounds like just what we're touching on, I guess, with a couple of those last points is the value in the data within the business, right? So you're talking about people having access to audiences they otherwise couldn't. I think that's what I've seen with a lot of technology companies that seem to have sold for like crazy multiples, and they don't even yet seem to have a subscription service. It's like you're just data. There's seems to be some huge value in that.
Yeah, I mean, like look at the hottest app right now, right? Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. Right. So that thing got valued over $1 billion for the last round. Andreessen Horowitz, not a slouchy shop. I mean, they were the first investor, but even when they first put that first $12 million in, the valuation was like $100 million. And they barely had like, you know, tens of thousands of people on this app.
Right.
And now, granted, they have, you know, they're north of a million. They're probably approaching 2 or 3 million. And, you know, I've been on the app. I really like the app. But the reality is, it's like, it's over $1 billion valuation, and they haven't produced a dime of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, hey, they have the audience, they have users, they have viewers. And the biggest thing they have besides all that is like how, look at the screen time, the usage, like how long people spend on that app is like crazy. So someone's paying for all these intangibles and not because of any financial number that they're pegging it to just yet.
Right. Right. It's mm-hmm. it's the possibility of what that might look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So we've, you know, kind of talked about different ways financially and intangibly to increase the value. You said something interesting when I asked the question earlier, for somebody who's not wanting to just sell outright, like why should they care? And you talked about how there's different ways of claiming some of that value
mm-hmm.
that you create without necessarily having to exit. What are some of the things that people have as options available to them that they might not be aware of or thinking about or taking seriously that they should really be looking into?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I think one of the things is, you know, a lot of let's call it solopreneurs or small business owners, because they come, a lot of people come out of corporate, but a lot of people don't. They just kind of like, whether it's high school, college, whatever it is, they're like, I'm going to work for myself. Like, I'm going to do whatever it takes because I just don't want to have a job and report to somebody. That's the reality. And they get into this business, whatever it is, and they start making money. And a lot of people, you know, like every human has whatever they were, you know, kind of brought up with or they watched when they were younger. Like, it's deeply rooted. So if you think about the average person like is debt avoidance at all cost.
Yeah.
Because you're taught like, ooh, don't get into debt.
Right.
But there's a huge difference between business debt and consumer debt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that a lot of new business owners don't really think about is business financing, business debt. They naturally associate with, consumer credit card debt or whatever it is. You know, I want to pay off my mortgage as fast as possible. I don't want to have any debt. And like, it's a nice concept, but the reality is like, especially inventory-based businesses, the best leverage you could do is leverage your inventory through financing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, if you're making 20 to 25% margins on your physical product, I mean, forget the information products where you're at 60 to 90%, but just on the physical products, you can get a regular bank to finance that at whatever, 5 or 6%. If you're mm-hmm. making 20 to 22, why tie up all your money constantly into new products? Like if you have, let's say you have 5 products, right? And the first 4 are already humming, the bank is going to lend you, you know, on almost like on a receivable kind of basis, like, hey, okay, go buy this inventory and turn it into cash. And then you can focus all your development on that fifth product or your marketing on that fifth product instead of spending all the money that's coming off of that worrying about how you're going to get it back into the business. So debt financing in general, while a lot of people shy away from it or they don't even know it exists, you know, I think there's both traditional banking, but you know, if you look in the online space, there are so many business lenders out there for the e-commerce or online business space. And people just naturally assume like, hey, stay away. Lending is bad. Debt is bad.
Yeah,
so there's tons of ways to use financing in creative ways or just traditional ways. That would be number one.
Nice. Yeah. Dean, I feel like you have some thoughts on that one.
Not particularly. I was just in agreement there because I can definitely say like I was raised, you know, like my parents never had a credit card, you know, and I was always sort of bought like told, you know, you don't buy something, you don't get anything you can't afford. If you can't afford it, you don't have it. It's as simple as that. I was raised that way. And I think I've had to work on that area. So it's interesting you bring that up because I do think that's probably a huge problem that people face.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a natural thing. And I'm not telling you to go take your credit card and buy stupid things with it. But if you're going to
hair gel.
Yeah.
Or artificial jellyfish tank.
Right.
Got it. So, you know, so I think like there's ways to do it. And like, even if you're just starting out, there's ways to leverage like zero APR credit cards to kind of fund your business. And now I don't know that really works at scale. And you need to make sure you're kind of paying that off. But if you have a business that's humming, you can definitely do that. There's ways to sell, parts of your business. Like if you don't want to sell the whole thing, but you want some liquidity, there's ways to, you know, family plan in the sense that like you can kind of gift over to your family parts of it. And, you know, there's lots of tax strategies that, and I am by no stretch of the imagination, the tax expert, but there's ways to do it. And there's even ways, like if your business gets big enough and you want to stay private, there's totally ways to sell, you know, parts of the business to employees and have like employee, you know, option plans or stock for employees that increases in value. You know, like if you think about all of the standard, you know, what I would call like the big four accounting firms that like, you know, a lot of small businesses don't use, but like PricewaterhouseCoopers and Deloitte and KPMG and Ernst & Young, they're partnerships. Well, yeah. Those partners, though, every year get different amounts of shares and every year the firm gets revalued and they determine what the firm is worth and you're paid and you can have shares given or taken or purchase more based on different things. So it's the same thing in a small business. You can do the exact same thing. It's just, it kind of hasn't like really trickled down. Like the knowledge base just isn't there. And sometimes it's not cost effective to do it, but there's, there's definitely options and opportunities out there.
And I feel like the knowledge is sort of trickling down, but it does feel more like a trickle.
Yeah.
Right.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. You said something interesting about selling part of your business. Like in your mind, is that, okay, you know, we've got three products and we want to divest one of those products, or, you know, are there other ways of carving things up that you have in mind?
Yeah, you could do lots of different things. I actually just finished a 5-part transaction for a food services business that like I advised them through this whole thing. And they're not like a $500 million company. They're about a, you know, I'd say like 10 to 20 million in a non-COVID year. They're more like a 20-ish million dollar business. And we acquired a competitor in this market who was a little bit tight on cash, but had great salespeople and great, you know, customer base. We acquired the core business out from one of the investors. We used a combination of debt financing. So the company took a short-term loan to kind of get through some of the working capital needs that they had. And they also simultaneously, to your point, they didn't divest something, but rather they sold a 15% stake in the business to someone who, I don't know if these guys really want to be in the business, but they want to be able to say they're in the business. Like some people just like owning things just to say that they own them, right? Like, I mean, it's true. I mean, you know, you get to a certain point and like people just do that kind of thing. And then there's a financial gain. So you can find buyers for different things. So they were able to sell a 15% stake in the business as well. And they have no control over the business. They're going to operate the way they will, but they're going to give them 15% of the profits every year on distribution.
Yeah.
For them, that was huge. You know, it was worth it because in this 5-part transaction, they needed a backstop of cash. And this equity purchase, like basically is going to sit in the bank account as a backstop for all the investors. So, you know, there's lots of different things you could do. You know, like James, if you're like, hey, I want to sell a part of my business off, there's probably people who will do it. A lot of people want to own the whole thing, but there are definitely people who just want to know that they're going to get some sort of distribution as a financial return, right? Like if I look at where else I could put my money and I say, hey, like my business is going great, but it's throwing off all this cash. Where can I put it? Well, I could put it in stocks. I could put it in crypto. I could put it in real estate. But also I know James is crushing in his business. I'd like a financial gain and I can think about what I'll put in. Let's say I put a dollar in. And every year, James is going to give me 18 cents of distributions. An 18% return annually is pretty attractive. And I'm going to own some portion of James's business if he ever does sell it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
That's awesome.
We got a comment here by from Yada, hashtag chubby margins. One of my favorite things to say. Have those chubby margins. This is super interesting, man, because I feel like in the entrepreneur online world, this is a conversation that doesn't get talked about as often as it could or even should. Because there's so many different options. It's not just, you know, buy something, sell something, create something, sell something. There's like this whole palette of different options available to you. And I think, you know, one of the reasons I was so excited to have you back on the show, I know last time we talked a little bit more about the deal making side of things, and this time I just kind of want to bring a higher level of awareness to people that you don't have to be, you know, $100 million company. You don't have to be a $1 billion corporation in order to take advantage of a growing, I would say, a growing transparency in the marketplace and a growing appetite to do these small to mid-sized deals that could be really attractive for both parties.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you're seeing it more and more and more where we see it like in my day job, right? We see the $5 billion deals. Those guys who only used to play up here, they're coming what we call downstream, right? They're looking for that $1 billion. And the guys who used to play in the $1 billion, now they're getting crowded out. They're looking at that 500 or that 250. And you're seeing like there are these roll-up strategies now. Like people have – there's so much money out there that wants to invest in different things. So the Amazon business space is one of these that there's probably four or five big players already that are just out there attracting cap. You know, they've raised a lot of capital and they're just going out and buying businesses. Yeah. You know, there's this company Thrasio, which is probably the biggest in the Amazon acquisition space right now. And they've already raised hundreds of millions of dollars with valuations over $1 billion because they've just accumulated brands. And most of those are these people are exiting the businesses, but there are other roll-ups that are like, hey, we're not looking to acquire your business. We're just looking to own a piece and maybe advise you and give you our access to our network. I mean, like Ty Lopez has been acquiring full-on brands that have struggled, but there are other players that I know of who are literally just looking to deploy even like $200,000 into people's businesses, own a piece, and then hopefully, you know, see it on the backside of an exit or a distribution or whatever it is. So it's definitely something that needs more and more awareness. And, you know, it's definitely viable. Like if people are looking to do that, there's a lot of money out there that's looking to just kind of have access to this stuff.
Money seeks value.
Definitely.
Yeah. We got one last question. And then I want to wrap up this segment. So somebody asked, with you having spent so much of your time in that pond with the bigger fish, right? Like the $5 billion deals and all this other stuff, you know, as you see that, what are some of the mistakes that you see the smaller, you know, entrepreneurial ventures, the smaller business owners like making over and over that you're just like, oh my God, if they just stop doing this.
Yeah. So some of it is transactional in the sense like I'll try and get through it in succinct fashion. The first thing is like I have advised this year in 2020 at least three people, probably more, but at least three that I can think of off the top of my head who came to me and they're like, hey, we did this agreement, but we never really papered it, right? We didn't put any documentation around it. And now they're telling me that they want this, or I owe them that, or they want a cut of this and that. And I'm like, okay, where's the agreement? And they're like, yeah, there is none. Like, you're good to go because good luck. Like, no lawyer is going to take that a contingent based on a bunch of emails because it's going to get thrown out. So like the number one mistake I see over and over and over again is like, hey, you know, we had a great conversation. Let's kind of get into business together. Oh, sounds good. We'll figure it all out on the fly. And then lo and behold, there's going to be a problem, right? Like 9 out of 10 times there's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's what the documentation is for. It's for the times that there are a problem. So that's mistake number one. But mistake number two, like in these transactions, I think is people are very short-sighted. And that is especially on the online, you know, entrepreneurial space where people are just not thinking about the long term. They're like, hey, fast cash. Okay, I can sell it here. And they didn't like really take a pulse of like, well, what happens if I stick with this another year? Like, and I see this in the Amazon space a ton. Like people are like, hey, I'm at $1 million run rate. I'm throwing off 25% margins. I can get like $1 million cash in the bank. Let me do it.
Mm.
But if you stayed in the business for another year,
yeah,
you probably could have made many multiples of that.
Right.
Because you would have refined your process. So I think one of the mistakes that people make is they're in a rush to get this payday. And they're not really focused on like, hey, does this make me happy? Is this what I really want to do? Like, why did you get into this business to begin with? Because if you think about that, then you may not be exiting as fast.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great perspective. Get in writing. Don't be short-sighted.
Yeah, I've written stuff in the past without documentation and things go wrong.
Yeah. Well, and you know, but at least you have the option because like I've had things in writing before and things went south and I'm just like, you know what? It's not worth pursuing.
Correct.
You know, and which is fine, but at least you have the option to do that.
Yeah. Or the ability to at least threaten.
Right.
You're going to do it.
Yeah. You know? If you're inclined to, you know, but everybody, I think the idea is create as many options for yourself as possible. So REA, just winding things down. I know you got some new things going on since the last time we talked. People can actually learn from you on a more formal basis. I think it's something that everybody who knows you has been pushing you to do for, I think, yes, at least the last 115 years.
Probably somewhere around there.
Somewhere around that neighborhood. So how can people get in touch with you and potentially you know, work with you and having you advise and or teach them on how to create better deals and you know, have this level of flexibility in their thinking?
No, I appreciate it. So the number one place probably just to even like get an application or the number one, number two places are solutionadvisory.com or applytothedend.com. Those are the two probably easiest places. And then you can, my podcast is Inside the Lion's Den, hence the Apply to the Den.
Right.
And then Instagram is probably the platform that like I'm most communicative in, and that's REA the Businessman.
All right. And that's AREH, the Businessman.
Correct.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks, man. Dean, any parting shots before we go to commercial break and then come back and wrap it up with the news?
No, just great catching up. I think it's definitely one of those conversations that, like you say, just a lot of people, or at least in sort of the space I work in, like people aren't approaching their businesses in this way. It's not even really a thought. So I think hopefully at very least we've given people something to think about and something to consider. Cause I know, you know, I've certainly seen that even people that say in digital product businesses where they're the expert, a lot of people don't think they have something that carries value to be able to sell on or to do anything more with. They just view it as a pure cash business. And I know there are businesses that way, but I think with some creativity, there's a lot of value that can be mined in any business. So I think it's been a great conversation. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks again for being here, man.
My pleasure.
Always great to talk.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, we're going to go to a quick commercial break and then we're going to be right back and we're going to have the news with Dean. All right, you guys, we're interrupting this incredible episode to bring you a very important announcement. And that announcement is the new Just the Tips members area.
What?
We've created a members area that has trainings right out of the gate from Dean and I on our best strategies to help you grow your business. And many of our guests that we've had on the show have offered to put some of their best stuff inside the members area to help you guys have access to all sorts of content that'll help you grow your marketing, grow your sales, make sure you're staying on top of your business, and you can work on your business, not in your business. Get more results in less time. I can't even like the reason you don't even hear Dean right now is he's galloping around the studio on his horse from sheer excitement. Dean, can you please stop galloping for 1 second and tell our good-natured listeners what's going on?
Whoa there, horse. So if I can slow this thing down, there's only one place you got to go to get all this good stuff, and that is JTTShow.com. That's JTTShow.com. It's all free, and I think you're going to love it.
We will see you guys on the inside of the new Justin Tibbs members area, JTTShow.com. Now back to our regularly scheduled programming. All right, Mr. Holland, it is time for the news. What do you got for us today, dude?
Well, so this week, the subject for this week actually came from some little disasters that I was having. So you'll know, James, I spend, you know, a good amount of money on advertising, particularly on Facebook.
Yes.
So I actually went through that dreaded thing of having my ad accounts closed down. Obviously, pure mistake this time. I like to think I do things above board and don't break policies. And so
it wasn't because of your inappropriate burlesque pictures like last time.
Not this time. Ever right. Since I pixelated things, I seem to have flown the radar there.
Oh, God. I'm sorry I asked. Now I want to scratch my eyes out.
So basically, I went through like a 2-week period of disasters, just like ad account being closed time and time again, every few days. And in talking to a few people, a common conversation kept coming up. And I don't know if you've seen about this, James, but there has been a huge amount of sort of talk and news around the subject of kind of Apple versus Facebook.
Yeah.
On the subject of tracking and data and the way in which data is used by these companies. I think basically the simple version of this for anybody listening that maybe hasn't necessarily been in that world to see this is that Apple has basically taken a stand that anybody that uses an iPhone, an Apple device, if you want to basically install an app such as Facebook, you will have the option now, or after a certain date, you will have the option. Do you want to allow tracking on this app? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I think from a consumer perspective, a user perspective, right? It's kind of surprising that that's not always been there, isn't it? I suppose in a way it's like, do you want to allow these companies to take your data to be able to track what you're doing when you use them?
Totally.
As an advertiser, from an advertiser's perspective, probably not so cool, you know, I think. And so this is kind of the news slash little bit of advice that I wanted to give around this news and to talk about this, because just like you, James, you know, we are two people that have, I guess, the good fortune of being in business for quite a long time now. We have experienced a lot of different things. And I think there is a lot of people right now that are online advertisers, predominantly, especially if they're using Facebook or other platforms, that are really freaking out now that, is this the end of advertising? Is this the demise of Facebook that people have maybe been holding out for? Is this where one of the giants falls because no longer they're allowed to take all of our consumer data or take the data of users? And I think it, one breath, I want to say that I feel there is, it is warranted if you are an advertiser and you're a direct response marketer, you would be warranted to pay attention to this. There are going to be a lot of, you know, certain implications, aren't there, around this type of thing. You are going to notice that things do begin to shift, you know, by nature of it. Let's just keep things simple. If your ad account no longer has the access to be able to pull back certain data from users that are clicking your ads and doing certain actions on your website, it is naturally going to impact you. But I think the reason I wanted to pull this forwards, even though this has kind of been going on a few weeks now, and the reason I wanted to talk about this is that I think what everyone just needs to primarily do here is just relax a bit. And just to understand that this is not going to be the end of advertising, for one. I mean, that would be crazy. Number two, it is not going to be the end of Facebook, right? I mean, that's crazy in and of itself. But what this is going to be, and this is where I want to encourage everybody to get their head into, is that this is going to be, no way around it, I believe this is going to be a major shift that forces us as advertisers, as online business owners, to adapt. And this is the big thing I wanted to like say, highlight this around this is this isn't the first time that business owners will adapt. It's not the first time it's happened, and it's sure as heck's not going to be the last. And I think, especially if you've maybe only been in business a few years, you probably are freaking out, right? It is like, oh, the world in which I knew everything I've depended on for my income, for my business success is about to be taken away by a third party. And you can kind of feel out of control. But above all, I think the biggest thing is to just understand that once you adapt through this, this is going to be a shift. We will all experience it. And I think that's to me is one of the biggest things that I draw on here is that understand that we're all going to go through the shift. You know, it's not you're going to lose out whilst your competitors thrive. It's not you're being targeted to be suffering through these changes and shifts. Every single person is going to have the same experience here, to the point of everybody will have to adapt. We will all have to find the new way of doing it, the different way of adapting, the way in which we look at our metrics, the way in which we look at our numbers, the type of numbers we're even looking at. I feel that there are going to be implications that we can't panic over. We just have to find a way to adapt. So I don't know. Obviously, I've done a bit of talking without coming up for air there. I don't know. Is this a subject that obviously has crossed your desk, James? Have you had feelings of concern or how do you feel around it?
I'm sorry. What did you say? Can you just repeat all that?
I said, how would you like to buy some hair gel?
I would love to. Count me in. In fact, I'd like to be a small minority investor in Helmet Head hair gel. No, I think you're absolutely right to bring this up. I think the points that you've made are super valid too. You know, for me, there's like a couple pieces to this. One, I completely agree. It's not the end of advertising. You know, that's sort of ridiculous. I think a lot of times these things get sensationalized for these big agendas as well. You know, Facebook's out there and, you know, they're like, oh my God, like, you know, it's almost like Facebook is creating the hysteria to a certain extent so that people are like, oh, like Apple's the bad guy. Mm-hmm. When I think you've rightly pointed out, Apple's probably giving some consumer protection that people have long wanted, if not needed, and making things a little bit more transparent. I think in the long term, transparency is a very good thing. And I think choice and option are good things in a market. There's going to be, there's bound to be some disruption, but then, you know, we go back to some of the things that we've been talking about time and time again on this show is diversify your customer acquisition channels. Yes. Right, you should not be reliant on one customer acquisition channel, because then if there's a major problem with that, you're going to get hit harder than you'd otherwise need to. You know, the second thing is, in my mind, the goal of advertising on social media, you know, whether it be, you know, Facebook or YouTube or even Google, you know, search or anything, is to capture that person's contact information and bring it onto your own platform. It is unreasonable to think that just because a platform is available and is producing incredible results for you right now, that it will always be that way. And I think this highlights for the people who are going to get hit the hardest that they haven't been thinking about what happens if this goes away or if this changes. I'm reminded of the very eloquent Warren Buffett quote. You never know who's swimming naked until the tide goes out, right? We don't know, right? Like there are businesses who are like 100% reliant on Facebook and not JV partners and strategic alliances and other sources of traffic and, you know, traditional things. And all those things are still available. It's just that I certainly don't want to say advertising on Facebook has been easy money. Because it's not, because it's a game with lots of ups and downs and lots of variables, but it has been a go-to source of traffic for a lot of people. And because it's been such an obvious source for people to tap into, I think people have gotten lazy in terms of figuring out what options they have available to them to create customers outside of that channel. And so, you know, here's the good news with this. And now I'm going on a rant just like you did. So I guess it's like
rant today.
So in Florida, you know, you'd get a hurricane every now and then. But the great thing about hurricanes, everyone's like, oh my God, like I don't want to live in a hurricane. And I get that. But living through a hurricane, you kind of have like 10 days to prepare for the thing. Okay. Yeah. If there were ever a polite natural disaster, I would say hurricanes get my nomination. It's like, hey, we're going to be there in about, 7 to 10 days. Just giving you a heads up. Right. So you have advance notice. And I would say with this, you also have advance notice. So don't wait until this becomes a problem to start diversifying, to start doing all these other things. Start preparing right now instead of like hoping that it doesn't happen. It's going to happen. And even if this whole situation gets turned around, it's still going to happen at some other point in the future. So our producer, Doug, is telling us that we have to wrap up here, which is I feel like it's a real party pooper move. I'm not going to lie.
4 hours.
We're going to go on a protest. We're going to go on strike. But anyway, so we do have to wrap it up. Thank you guys for listening today. It's been an incredible show. Thanks again for REA for coming on the show. To all of our listeners, we appreciate you guys. Make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends and family about us. This is James P. Friel signing off with my amazing co-host who's about to ride home on his noble white steed, Mr. Dean Holland. We will talk with you guys next time. Later, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to Just the Tips, where we believe business should be profitable and fun. For show notes, links, and other information on our guests, visit justthetipsshow.com. For more information on how to connect with Dean Holland, visit deanholland.com. And if you'd like to go from being a hustling entrepreneur to an effective CEO capable of running your company without being stuck in the day-to-day, visit me for free training and resources at jamesbfriel.com. Our theme music is Happy Happy Game Show by Kevin MacLeod. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.